and we were looking at the dynamics of the inflaton in this potential phi, V phi. Another question which we want to ask is how high this inflaton should be initially so that it generates sufficient number of E-foldings. So for that, let us take some example. Let us take the case where V phi is a very simple potential, half m square phi square. This is one of the most popular models of inflation now, which is considered. And let us try to see its dynamics. And then we'll figure out how much inflation we need. So let us first look at the Friedman and the Klein-Gordon equation. So the Friedman equation we know is 8 pi g by 3, phi dot squared by 2, plus v of phi. But if we are working in the slow roll approximation, then this is just 8 pi by 3 mp squared v phi. And if we put v phi, which is this, then the equation which we get is this. So this is the first equation which we have for this particular potential. So now we are just considering this potential, and we are going to constrain everything for this model. The second equation is the Klein-Gordon equation. So as I told you in the first class, that we have three equations, Friedman equation, Rai-Chaudhuri equation, and the Klein-Gordon equation. And if we have matter which has varying equation of state, like this inflaton, if it is slow rolling, it mimics cosmological constant. If it will be somewhere here oscillating, it will look like dust. So it has a varying equation of state, so we need two equations to solve completely. So the second equation we are going to use is the Klein-Gordon equation, which is, for this potential, is this, m squared phi equal to 0. Because v prime phi gives us m squared phi. OK, so we have these two equations, and this, in, again, in the slow roll approximation, is just 3h phi dot plus m squared phi equal to 0. And now we can solve these two equations and obtain the solution for the scale factor and the scalar field. We just have to integrate these two equations, solve them simultaneously. So if we solve them simultaneously, then we get phi of t is some phi initial, which comes from the constant of integration, minus m, mp, t by square root of 12 pi. This is the solution of these equations. And then a of t is some ai, which is again a constant of integration, exponential 2 pi by mp square, phi I square minus phi square t. OK, so this is the, these are the solutions. Now let us look at the slow roll parameters. First, let's look at epsilon. So epsilon's definition was 1 over 16 pi, mp squared by 16 pi v prime phi v whole square. And if you plug in v prime phi and v phi for this potential, then it turns out that this answer is mp square by 4 pi phi square. This is the epsilon. And similarly, we can find eta, which is the second slow roll parameter, which was mp square by 8 pi. And this answer is again the same, mp square by 4 pi phi square. So in this model, epsilon and eta are equal to each other. Both of the slow roll parameters, they are equal. OK, so now we know from the tutorial exercise yesterday that w is given by minus 1 plus 2 by 3 epsilon. Right? And epsilon, if it becomes 1, then w becomes minus 1 by 3, and inflation stops. That is when the While if epsilon is greater than 1, then there will be no violation of strong energy condition and we will not have accelerated expansion. So we want to see, now we can ask the question that suppose the inflaton started somewhere from here, I want to ask what was the value of the inflaton when the inflation ended? Okay, so we want to find like at what point in the potential inflation is going to end, or where does the epsilon become equal to 1 in the potential. So that is very easy now because we know epsilon. So we can just put it equal to 1 equal to mp square by 4 pi phi square. So which implies that phi n is mp by 4 pi. This is when the inflation is going to end in this potential, if this is the model. Okay, so now since we know when inflation is going to end, so we know at what point we should stop counting the e-foldings, because our task is to find how many, if we want 60 e-foldings, where, how high should be the inflaton. We know where is inflation going to end. So this is the last point we are going to stop counting how many e-foldings were generated. So now we just have to figure out phi initial. Okay, so let us do that. Okay, so now let us rewrite the number of e-foldings from some time t to some time tf when phi becomes equal to phi end. And my claim is that this is equal to this integral htt. And the reason why this is true is because we can integrate it and the answer will come out to be log of af by a, which is the same expression which we use to define e-foldings. Okay, so instead of working with scale factor, we can work with this integral. Now, it's the same thing. So now, let us rewrite this integral in term, not in terms of time, but in terms of the scalar field. Okay, so let us ask the question, how much was the e-foldings with respect to the phi, from some phi to phi end or phi f, okay? And this integral will be phi to phi f. We'll just rewrite in terms of the scale factor. And this will be h phi, h divided by phi dot d phi. Because this will just give dt, d phi by phi dot. Okay? And now I will use some equation. So if you recall from yesterday's class, we derived that h dot is minus 4 pi g phi dot square for this scalar field. And if you don't recall it, we can derive this from the Friedman equation, again, and using the Rai-Chaudhuri equation. So this we noted down yesterday, that h dot is this quantity. And now I can rewrite h dot from in using this h dot, I can find out what is dh by d phi, which is what I am going to write as h prime now. So h prime will mean derivative with respect to phi. So we can find out h prime, and this is just dh by dt, 1 over phi dot, and this is equal to minus 4 pi g phi dot. Okay, dh by d phi is this quantity. Okay, and now we can, what I want to do is, I have this phi dot here in this integral. I want to eliminate this phi dot using h prime. Okay? So h prime is minus 4 pi g phi dot. I want to eliminate phi dot so that I get h by h prime. And the reason for that is because I'll convert then h by h prime as a ratio of potential and its derivative. Okay? So then I'll get everything in terms of potential. Okay? So just bear with me for 2 minutes and then the motivation will become clear. So this is equal to minus 4 pi g phi f h by h prime d phi, just using this equation in this equation. And now we know that h, now we are going to rewrite this in terms of potential. So we know that in the slow roll approximation, H is equal to 8 pi g by 3, v to the power half. So H square is 8 pi g by 3 v. Okay, so I'm just taking the square root of the Friedman equation. So H is this quantity. And then I can also derive H prime by taking the derivative of this equation with respect to phi, and that will be half square root 8 pi g by 3 v prime phi v to the power minus half. So actually, like, it's my bad notation. So this is also the derivative with respect to phi, and H prime also means derivative with respect to phi. Okay, they are the same things. So now once I have these two equations, I can plug it back here in the first equation for E foldings. And then if you do it, what you get is 8 pi g and then I am changing the limits phi f to phi v by v prime phi d phi. So this is the answer which we get. The number of e foldings, so we knew the number of e foldings is log of af by a. We wrote in terms of an integral. We wrote that integral in terms of phi. We eliminated phi dot, got everything in terms of Hubble and its derivative with respect to the scale factor. And then we wrote everything in terms of potential and its derivative. Okay, so this gives us this answer. So now we can plug in any potential here. So if suppose somebody gives you a potential, then you can just plug in the potential and calculate the number of e foldings. So let us do that. So now I want to compute the number of e foldings from some phi initial to phi f. How many e-foldings happened. And then I'll get an expression of phi initial in terms of the number of e-foldings. And then plugging number of e-foldings equal to 60, I'll find out what is phi initial. So that is the plan. So now, so we have this n from some phi f to phi i to phi f, which is 8 pi g phi I v by v prime phi d phi. And now let us put b equal to half m square phi square. V is half m square phi square. So we can compute v prime phi. And if we compute v by v prime phi, we just get half phi. We just get phi by 2. So we get n equal to 8 pi g is 8 pi by mp square. Phi f phi I phi by 2 d phi. And now we can integrate it. It's super easy. So we get 4 pi by mp square, phi I square by 2 minus phi f square by 2. Okay, so now let us put phi f from here. This is where the inflation ended. So this is our phi f. Okay, let us put it back here in this expression. And then we will get 2 pi phi I square by mp square minus 2 pi by mp square. And then phi f square is mp square by 4 pi. So this quantity is just half, the second quantity. So now we get the answer that n for m square phi square potential is given by 2 pi phi I square by mp square minus half. So this is the equation we wanted to determine for the initial condition for phi. Okay? So now we can put n equal to 60, which we need to solve horizon and flatness problem. So if you put n equal to 60, then you can see after a little bit of algebra, that phi is 3m Planck. Okay? So if inflation, if m square phi square, if somebody gives you m square phi square potential, and if we want to get at least 60 foldings, so the first exercise which we did was to find out where the inflation ends. This is a very important number. Unless we know that, we don't know what is the where we have to stop counting the e-folding. So there, this we knew. And then we want to obtain what where the inflation started, because I know what is the final point. And that is just this quantity, three Planck mass, actually 3.1. And that will give you n equal to 60. So in today's tutorial, you're given a problem which is similar to this. But the problem is, let me add one more input here. So we have this m square phi square potential. So one question which we want to ask is, what is this m? We don't know. This phi has not been given to you from any particle physics theory. So this m has to be constrained by observations. And it actually turns out that if you look at the perturbations which are generated by this inflationary model, then cosmic microwave background restricts this m. And the restriction which comes is that m is 10 to the power minus 6 m Planck. Okay? So now you can ask the question, what is V phi? What is the V phi when phi I is 3 Planck mass? So if you compute that, then you get, let us say around 10, because it's anyway 3. So we get a 9n, or we can put 9, MPL4. So you can see that V phi is actually of the, is just this, 10 to the power minus 11, MPL4, very small. So you remember, like we were talking yesterday about the how the inflation starts in the chaotic inflationary scenario, that the aim was that, or the motivation was that you start just after the Planck time, there are chaotic initial conditions, and then because of those initial conditions, there are some fluctuations, and the inflaton goes slightly up in the potential, and then it starts rolling down. But since you are starting after the Planck time, so you see, like, to solve for 60 foldings, this is sufficient, a very small fluctuation. That V phi is just 10 to the minus 11 MPL4 immediately after the Planck time. But you can ask that immediately after the Planck time, it's quite possible that instead of having 10 to the power minus 11, what I just have is V phi of the order of MPL4. Because anyway, things just emerge from the Planck density. Okay? So if you ask that, that is a problem which you have to solve in the tutorial today. The number of E foldings turn out to be huge. Not 60, they'll come out to be a huge astronomical order. And then it actually turns out that there is a problem which is called Trans-Planckian problem, which you will see in the class, where the problem is that if you consider any wavelength today, and if you take into account this huge number of E foldings, which will happen if V phi was MPL4, then the physical length of those wavelengths when the inflation started was much below the Planck length. Okay? So this is essentially the Trans-Planckian problem. This points out to one of the problems of inflation, that in most models of inflation, if you start from chaotic initial conditions, you will get huge number of E-foldings, not 60, like really huge. And then if you consider those number of E-foldings, it will turn out that you will be talking about physical lengths which are smaller than Planck length when inflation started. And then you can just stop believing. Because, like, the whole assumption of this paradigm is that you have a continuum space-time, you have classical GR, you can write down a potential in this classical GR, you can solve Einstein field equations. But if you are talking about the scales which are smaller than Planck length, the whole motivation breaks down. Because then we expect that quantum gravity corrections should really change the Einstein field equations. And then this whole dynamics is not satisfactory. We have to take into account the quantum gravity effects. Like, intuitively, like, there is no proof as such that one has to. But the whole point of using this is that we are living at a continuum, we are assuming a continuum space-time. And it is very unreasonable, or it requires really a daunting challenge to propose that I'm talking about wavelengths much smaller than Planck length, and I can use the continuum approximation. Okay? So that is the point. So now we are actually beginning towards the end of inflation. Yeah. Let him ask. He asked first.
We didn't begin from any particle physics motivation. I just wanted to understand what restricts what the connection between CMB and the Mach is.
The connection comes from the computing the amplitude of perturbations. So you can assume this model. You can assume Einstein field equations are correct everywhere. Then you compute the cosmological perturbations. And when you compute the magnitude of cosmological perturbation, amplitude of cosmological perturbation, which will be delta rho by rho, then this mass will be in that fraction. And if you observationally constrain with such a quantity, you will be putting bound on this mass.
Yes. Two things. First of all, what's the Planck mass in GeV? Or do you know that sometime, or does anyone know?
10 to the 19. 10 to the 19?
Yeah. Okay. Secondly, what happens after we reach the end of inflation? Because I mean, like, we're still rolling down.
I'm coming to it. I'm just coming to it. But I hope like people have understood like what is happening here. Like, to get 60 folding is very easy. Okay, you just have to start from free Planck mass. But the point is, if you start from actually chaotic inflationary conditions, and if you take the original motivation which Linde gave, then you should be getting huge number of free foldings, which you will compute today in the tutorial. And if that is true, then it requires serious amount of motivation to consider this. Okay. So now let us answer your question. So what happens here is, I'm not going to go into the details of the dynamics, but I'll complete the story. So the field, now the picture is that field, chaotic inflation somehow gave us the inflaton which was sitting here. And there is actually another problem, which is more related to quantum foundations, that we have so far created this inflaton classically. We have assumed it's a classical field. And if this model comes from any fundamental physics or quantum gravity, we have to first explain how this field actually became classical from the quantum fluctuations of the space. And so that is actually one of the very deep unsolved problems. So this field was starting here, let's say somewhere here. This field starts rolling down in the slow roll. Somewhere here, when epsilon becomes equal to 1, the inflation ends. Now after that, this field keeps rolling down, it reaches somewhere here, and then it keeps oscillating for some time in this minimum. This is a process of preheating, like which we will not study in the class, because then it goes into its own field by itself. During this preheating, the field's energy is transferred to radiation and other modes. Okay, like this is where the radiation will be generated, or the hot Big Bang. And then the universe becomes radiation dominated after the reheating has stopped. Yes?
Here's the answer is the insulator, oscillator, and the particle, the potential. It's because the friction in the equation of motion,
yeah.
That, or it's because it's a decay to another particle.
Okay, good question. So first of all, there is a friction which is occurring because of cosmic expansion, which is slowing down this inflaton, but it is oscillating. When it oscillates, its equation of state varies from 1 to minus 1. So it averages out like a test, which has W equal to 0. And then at the same time, it is decaying into other time. Yes, that is a process of
reheating. Why the two process happen at the same time? Because I think the one particle decay to the inflaton. Decay to another particle is not related to the inflator B gravity. This is true.
Sorry, I don't understand.
I mean, the two processes are independent. I mean,
but the two processes are I think they are more or less independent. So what is happening is that when the inflaton starts decaying, and once inflaton reaches here, then the universe doesn't go into accelerated expansion. It is just behaving like ordinary universe. Okay, strong energy condition is not violated. So what happens after here is the inflaton just has to decay into other particles, and that decay essentially is preceded by this oscillations around the minima. Yes.
So since this is just a model, could one sort of and this is just a speculative question, could one tweak it in such a way to have inflation occur again?
We will do that now. That is the cosmological constant issue. So that is, so the, essentially like, the point is that the way the standard model of cosmology is, like it is incomplete. So we need accelerated expansion, both in the very early universe, which we have studied, and the observations tell us that it is operating even now. So people look at it, like the problem of dark energy or the quintessence, which we'll study tomorrow a little bit, is essentially playing the same game, but at eight times. Your question?
What's the priority of the oscillation?
Sorry?
What's the priority of the oscillation?
Well, it depends on the potential. What do you mean the period? For m square pi square? Yeah, I don't know. Like there is a process of reheating involved, so maybe I can try to answer it tomorrow. Okay?
So, how do we know that inflation stuff, like, how do we know the size of the universe is function of time kind of thing at all in the past? Like, how do we know we had some really fast exponential inflation and then we just accelerate at a constant speed and then we start accelerating? Like, how do we know that we only recently start accelerating again?
Okay, I'll explain that. Okay. So, why we know that we have inflation in the past, we don't know for sure. It's just a hypothesis. We have observations from cosmic microwave background, and you can make your own model if you wish, like, and if it is successful, that will be great. So we all can make our own models, and then some of us can make this model, and it will turn out, if you look at the cosmological perturbations of this model gives the answer which is most compatible with observations. So that is why most people believe very strongly in this model. There is no, like, we don't know that, like some primordial Bible, which says that it is m square phi square, not at all.
But I mean, people always say that we only universe only recently started accelerating again.
Yeah, I'll explain why.
But how do we know that before that?
Yeah.
We were not like. How do we know between 2 billion years ago and 10 billion years ago we were not accelerating? Do
we
have
also
observations?
Know that. It's because of the observations which we have.
On what?
So, for example. So if the universe, the lazy answer is if the universe accelerated somewhere in the middle, then we'll screw up the thermal history. And then we have very strong constraints from Big Bang nucleosynthesis, synthesis, which will not allow any dark energy in that region. Or if there was dark energy, or if there was accelerated expansion in the middle of the universe, then the structures will not form, and we'll not have galaxies and so on. Because the point is that the accelerated expansion is repulsive, it takes things away. So it took things away, but then if the galaxies and various cosmic structures have to form, the force has to be attracted. Okay, but we'll come to that point. That why how we know. Please, I'll give you one detail of the observations. That how we know that universe is accelerating now. Okay, it's actually a detailed topic related to astronomy, but we'll still cover it. But before I go there, because I think like we are going slow, and I'm not sure like where we will be at the end of tomorrow's lecture. So let me write down the problems of inflation. So it's a beautiful paradigm. It's a very cute idea, but it should be, it's not a theory as such. It just tells us what should have happened so that we can solve some problems of standard model. So some of the problems of, so it depends on whom you talk to, who is doing alternative cosmology or any serious cosmologist, but like, let me write down four problems which immediately come to mind. So the first problem is, what is inflation? So we don't know that. It's just putting by hand some real scalar field. It has not been derived from any particle physics model. So, but it is just there. And we have, I think tomorrow I will show you like how in some theories we can get some fields which act like the way inflation acts. Okay? So it is just a real field. It has not been derived from any model so far. Here, that's an open problem. These are all open problems. It's not like I have to know any of these questions. So the second question is, why was it displaced? Or what caused the fluctuations? So what I gave you was just a heuristic motivation of there were chaotic initial conditions, like we are starting after the Planck time, and maybe there were some regions which had some fluctuations, which caused in return to just explain. But there is no theory behind this state, no rigorous framework. So we don't know like what is that, and people actually try to put up bounds on or the probability measure on that. And so I think like one paper you should certainly try to go through on this is by Hawking and Hertog, which actually asked this question, why Hertog started top of the hill. It's a very nice paper. Then one of the, I think one of the biggest questions is what came before intuition? So we have assumed so far that we have continuum space-time. We have G mu equal to T mu, well-acted, as early scaled as possible. But this is very unsatisfactory unless we know there was some theory which led to Einstein field equations, first of all. Okay, so this is where the whole problem of quantum gravity comes in. We don't know the full theory of quantum gravity. We know only in some patches. And there is a large amount of research which is occurring to explain how inflation can fit into quantum cosmology and so on. Okay, so we don't know that. These are all open issues, and these are all are the research directions which you can take. Any of the questions answered is fabulous. And since we know that inflation is not visitor space time, W is not equal to minus one, and if you And as I told you in the first class, if W is not minus 1, and as you saw in the tutorial, the space-time curvature is going to diverge as A goes to 0. But some of you may think, or many of the people thought, that anyway there will be some quantum fluctuations, and perhaps you can violate null energy condition and get rid of the singularity. So actually it was proved by Bode, Lincoln, and Gutt quite recently, that even if that happens, and under very mild assumptions, you can prove that inflationary space-time is past incomplete. That means there is a singularity even if there was inflation. You cannot get rid of it, even if there were fluctuations. So then it comes to the biggest question, how do we avoid initial singularity? And my personal belief is that once we know the answer of this question, everything will fall into place. Because this will tell us what was the quantum gravity at that time, how then, and what were the equations before that, and it will automatically set the initial conditions for inflation here. And probably it will also tell us what is inflation. So that is something which, these are the open directions, which if you are interested in cosmology, these are the real fundamental questions which you should try to solve. Okay? So I will not talk about, so tomorrow what I'll do is I'll talk about some models in which this happens, and something very interesting happens that it also leads to the possibility that the omega, which you actually showed in the second tutorial, becomes very close to 1, may not actually become 1, and you can cook up models where it will be less than 1. And I will not talk about this at all, and I don't think your quantum gravity course will talk about this, if you take. But there is a lot of work which has been happening into this direction, and if I get time, I will try to give you some highlight of some of the models which are automated to inflation. Okay, I think we should stop at on inflation here, and let's go to the accelerated expansion in the modern times. So are there any questions here? Because now we are going to change the topic. We'll return to inflation again tomorrow if we get time after dark energy. Has anybody any answers? Any thoughts?
For this time.
Why should we avoid the initial singularity?
What should we?
Why do we want to avoid this initial singularity?
Because initial singularity tells us that generativity is wrong.
Sir?
Initial singularity tells us that generativity is incomplete. Because it's a singularity, it's a generic singularity. If you look at G mu equal to T mu.
Yeah, what's the problem with having a singularity?
Because we don't understand what happened, like how, what was the mechanism which answers these questions. Like, you can live with the singularity, there is no problem, but it'll be a, like, it's a matter of taste. If you're an astronomer, you can say that I don't worry about singularity. It is anyway far back in the past. I was not born then. But the point is that we have to understand how our universe was born. I think that's the most fundamental question, at least for me. So maybe
this might be more than singularity.
No, you cannot do that. Because at the singularity, the Einstein-Fields equations just break down. They don't, the physics just stops. There is no predictive power. I think, like, if there are questions on singularities, let us ask tomorrow.
Not singularity, it's a more general question.
Okay.
How can we assume that laws of physics which hold within our universe,
it is not
obvious that they should hold at its beginning?
Absolutely. That's the main point. And to answer your question, suppose there was no singularity. Let us say that. Okay? Then one of the solutions of this problem is that the universe actually bounds. That you start looking at the universe. Suppose you look at time and the scale factor. Einstein's theory tells you that it goes like this. A goes to 0, sorry. So A goes to 0. And we don't know anything here. You can't apply GR here. Okay? The theory is dead. If the theory is dead, nobody can put initial conditions on anything. Okay? But suppose, and then we are trying to solve the horizon problem and so on, assuming all this. But suppose this picture is wrong, which I believe is wrong, actually. And the universe actually had something like this. You have seen that people believed 30 years ago, strong energy condition, violation is useless completely. It cannot be violated. Now we live with violation of strong energy condition. But we are living still with G mini equal to T mini. But the belief is that if quantum gravity exists, and does exist, then G mini equal to T mini has to be modified, and the modification may lead to a bouncing solution like this. Okay? Sorry?
This diagram issue to be on.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm plotting like A versus pi, whereas it should be A versus T. Something like this, let us say. Something like this, okay? Then you don't have to solve, then you don't even have to invoke strong energy condition to solve horizon problem. Because the problem with the horizon just solves automatically, because you can always say that there was infinite time here in this branch for the modes to come in quantum contact. Right? You don't need inflation. So that is the thing. So the point is that nature works in a very simple way. We haven't been able to figure out that out in the model. My belief is that once we solve this problem, many problems will be automatically solved, and maybe we'll not require all these questions at all. So this is, for example, what our boss does, like Neil Duroc and his collaborators have a model, which is called aquiotic or cyclic scenario, in which what they envision is that there is a model coming from string cosmology which does something like this, that there is a bounce. What we don't understand is how these bounces happen, which is where there is a lot of work in quantum gravity to understand this separately from even from loop quantum gravity. So there, suppose if such a model is true, then you don't need inflation at all. And actually their model even tries to predict why universe will have to accelerate in more modern times. Okay? So this problem is, I think, is the most fundamental problem in present physics.
Why so people tend to favor inflation more than this?
Let us talk about it later, okay? After the class. Not on mic. I think, like, we have to hurry because, like, this is about it. These are good questions, but we have to finish some parts.
But what I want to say is that you should keep very open mind. Even if I have taught you about inflation, it's not like I like inflation. I've taught you because unless we understand its problems, we are not going to make a better theory. And it's a beautiful paradigm, but it has to be made. We have to make a theory to work. Okay. Okay. So let us talk about dark energy. Well, let us talk about cosmological constant and dark energy. Okay, so I think like this part should be very straightforward now because we understand most of the things already. So now we so the idea which I told you earlier was in the first class that we have this equation, which is Einstein field equations. And then actually like the motivation to introduce cosmological constant came to Einstein in 1917, in which he was trying to obtain a static solution of the space-time. So now this may seem counterintuitive, because in all the classes we have seen the strong energy conditions violation leads to expansion, accelerated expansion. But Einstein actually obtained a static solution using lambda. But he did it for a closed model. Okay, so that is where we'll see how it happens. Okay, so he was trying to build a model of the universe, and his point was that we don't see the recession of galaxies or anything. They are at the same distance from us or the same scale factor. So people strongly believed at that time that the universe is static, it doesn't expand. And if you recall, perhaps Neish must have taught you that in the closed universe, if you have dust, okay, k equal to 1 universe, then the universe collapses. Okay, recollapses at late times. So the idea is that if you put a lambda or a repulsive term in such a universe, maybe the universe will become static. That maybe the repulsion will be repulsion will cancel this closeness of the universe. So this is what Einstein achieved. I'll show you how. But his idea was to put a lambda to obtain a static universe. So how you can do that is let us first look at the Friedman equation for a closed universe, which is this, where k is equal to 1 for the closed universe. And then we also have the Rai-Chaudhuri equation, which is same. Rho plus 3p. Now we want to have a static universe, which doesn't expand, which doesn't contract. So we want Hubble to be 0. Okay, that Hubble should vanish in such a universe. And we also want A double dot to be 0. So A dot is 0, A double dot is 0. And then our universe will be perfectly static. So let us do that. So let us put rho. Let us consider rho, which is rho dust plus rho lambda. So rho dust coming from T min u and rho lambda coming from this lambda G min u. So rho lambda is lambda by 8 pi g. Okay, so now this quantity is greater than or equal to 0 because rho dust is positive and rho lambda is positive. So even if you would not have fixed k by now, it tells you that this k, okay, wait. What we want is that so we want a static solution. This is our Friedman equation. We put h equal to 0. We get rho should satisfy this. If rho is positive, the static solution can only occur if k is positive or k is 1. K cannot be 0, which is flat. K cannot be negative, which is open universe. Okay. So only a closed universe can give a static thing. That is the first point. And now let us compute. So this implies this is the k equal to 1. And now let us compute rho plus 3p. So we want a double dot equal to 0, which implies rho plus 3p is equal to 0. And what is rho plus 3p? So rho is rho dust plus rho lambda. And p for dust is 0. So dust, so p should actually have p dust plus p lambda. But p dust is 0 because dust is pressureless. And we have p lambda. But p lambda is equal to minus rho lambda because that is the cosmological constant. Okay, so that is why rho dust. So now we can find what is rho plus 3p. So rho plus 3p equal to 0. You can check. would imply
that rho dust is 2 times rho lambda. If you put this and this here and solve, you'll get this answer. The rho dust is 2 times rho lambda. Okay. So Einstein was very happy with this equation, that he could relate the energy density for dust with the cosmological constant. Okay? He was happy because his point of view was that cosmological constant is a global quantity, whereas the energy density for dust is a local quantity. And he strongly believed in the Machian principle, which related global quantities with the local quantity. So he said, like, this is very beautiful, that now I have a solution where the global quantity lambda is related with the local energy density of dust. Okay, and it's very strict. It's an equality here with the 2 rho lambda. But now let us derive the static solution from here. So once we know this, then we know that rho plus, then we know that rho, which is rho dust plus rho lambda, is just 3 times rho lambda. Okay, because rho dust is 2 times rho lambda. So now we can put this rho into this equation, and we can find out what is the scale factor of the universe. So if you do that, then these two equations imply here that the scale factor AE for Einstein, that 1 over AE square is 8 pi g rho lambda, or AE is 1 over square root of lambda. So Einstein not only was able to fix the local energy density, the local concept like the energy density of dust with the global quantity like lambda, he was able to fix the scale factor of the universe using just the cosmological constant. So he was very satisfied that this is the only model of the universe, because it's so beautiful. It's static. It doesn't expand. It doesn't contract. Everything is fixed by the Machian principle. Okay? But now this model has a big problem. The big problem is that if you try to perturb this model a little bit, it's completely unstable. So if you, for example, consider A, which is slightly less than AE, then this corresponds to rho dust to be greater than rho lambda. Okay? And if rho dust, you can actually check this. So you can put rho, instead of putting rho dust equal to 2 rho lambda, you can put it equal to 3 or 4 rho lambda. You can put it into this equation, and you will find that A comes out to be smaller than AE. Okay, you can just cross-check it. So if A is slightly less than AE, then rho dust is greater than 2 rho lambda. And then you know what will happen. Rho plus 3p, which is 0, will actually become positive, and the universe will start decelerating. Okay, so if it is static, if you slightly decrease the scale factor, universe starts contracting. Or starts decelerating, okay? And actually, the universe will start contracting using this equation also. And then if A is slightly greater than AE, then it will imply that rho dust is slightly less than 2 lambda, and the universe will start expanding because strong energy condition would be violated. So this model was highly unstable, okay? But this was a problem which was noted later on. So Einstein was very satisfied with this model. Like, he had a friend called De Sitter, who actually came up with another model in the same year, 1917. And that model, let us see that model. And it was because of that Einstein was not so happy that he had to introduce cosmological constant. So De Sitter came up with a model which had a metric, which is ds square equal to 1 over cos square hr dt square minus dr square minus 1 over h square tan square hr, and then d theta square plus sine square. And in the De Sitter model, this H was square root of lambda by 3, which looks very familiar because we have just studied inflation. And then he took all other energy densities and pressure to be 0. He had nothing. He had no matter. He just had a cosmological constant. Okay? And he showed that you can write down a metric in this form, which doesn't depend on time at all, like this quantity, H, or this H. And his proposal was this is a static universe, like Einstein. So this served as a counterexample. So Einstein's idea was that you have a Machian principle behind you, so you can relate local energy density of matter with a global quantity of lambda. De Sitter came up with a solution where he had no matter at all, and he had just lambda, and he produced a static metric. But actually, it turns out that this is not a static universe. So it was shown by Weil in 1923 that this metric has a fine connection, which is non-zero. And it will cause the expansion of the universe. So why was it useful? Let me then tell you. So in 1920s, there were first observations by Slipher, who observed that galaxies actually are redshifting from us. So the whole premise of that the universe is static was anyway going away. And then in 1924, Eddington used De Sitter's model to explain this redshift of galaxies. So De Sitter's metric was, though he was saying that it's stationary and so on, but people were actually, then Eddington used in, this is just like history too, which is probably useful later on. And he was able to show, he was able to compute that redshift goes as Hubble times the distance, the coordinate distance to the galaxy, which actually reminds you of the Hubble law, if you have seen in the first week. Okay, so people were actually able to figure out from so-called static universe, which was not static, that the how the galaxies should actually recede from us. And then, as we have studied Friedman model all through in this course, the De Sitter metric or the De Sitter solution is a special case of the Friedman metric. So if we write down the Friedman metric, which is ds square equal to dt square minus a square dr square 1 minus kr square plus r square d omega square. And if you take the solution k equal to 0, rho equal to 0, then you can write it in this form. So De Sitter case was anyway a special case of the Friedman universe. And then around at this time, Albert Einstein, like he felt very apologetic already that maybe he should not have introduced cosmological constant. And this is like this folklore that he calls that this was his biggest blunder. But the folklore says that when Hubble discovered in 1929 that the universe is, the galaxies are actually going away, then Einstein said this. But this actually occurred in 1924 itself, like if one looks at his biography and so on. So most of the people then forgot about cosmological constant because there was no purpose to introduce it. The only idea was that it gives, the motivation was that it will perhaps give a static universe, but it did not. So I think like we are done now. Or can we go ahead? Okay, good. So let us go ahead. So let me introduce to you cosmological constant problem, and then tomorrow we'll go towards the why we actually need lambda now. So in the meanwhile, people were, so once Einstein had introduced this, and people, most of the people had forgotten, but sometimes it happened that people saw some observations, and they thought, okay, let us try to invoke this lambda, like in 60s or 70s, and then let us see like whether we can explain the a particular observation. So around at that time, Zeldovich, who did huge amount of work in cosmology, he was working on the problem of looking at the space-time, the vacuum fluctuations of the space-time. So you consider any mode, any field with some mass, and you look at its zero energy, and you sum over the zero energy. And then he was trying to show that if you look at these one loops of the one-loop quantum vacuum fluctuations, then they give rise to a T mu nu vacuum, which actually is of this form. This is what he showed. And this is exactly our cosmological constant. Why don't you ask later? You see, we have to finish this. I'll take it after the class, okay? So then what we can do is that we can forget that there was a lambda. And we can just say that we had some t mu nu. And then we had this t mu nu of the vacuum given to us. And then it just looks like the cosmological constant term, lambda g mu nu. And then people thought that maybe this is what people think, that cosmological constant is essentially because we are looking at the vacuum fluctuations of the fields in the space-time. And now we can compute how much is this rho vac, if we want to know what is the lambda. Because we can just say that this rho vac is some lambda effective by 8 pi g, using the definition of the lambda which we already know. So we can compute this rho vac. So we can consider some fields of mass m. And if you look at the rho vac, then this is essentially given by an integral over k modes, where m is the mass of the field. So we are looking at the zero point energy, and we are summing it over. Okay, and this integral actually diverges because of infinity here. So it has an ultraviolet divergence. So what people do is that we say that there is a k max, which we can put it here, which is a cutoff. And this k max is given by the Planck scale. So if you this is the hypothesis. This is an assumption. There is no theory as such behind it because we don't know quantum gravity, right? So this is the idea is that let us put a k max here. And then we'll put this k max as the Planck scale. So if you compute this integral, then this comes out to be k4 max by 16 pi square. And if you put k max as the equal to Planck scale, then you get rho vac, which is essentially 10 to the power 18 GeV4. So this will be your lambda. This will lead to your lambda if lambda was just because of the vacuum fluctuations. Okay, because you know this, you can put it here and you can compute what is lambda from here. But now let us look at what is the lambda which is given to us by the observations. So I will do this tomorrow, but we know the number already. And the number is, yeah. You have a question?
Okay, good.
So let us go ahead. So we know the number already, and the number which we have is that we know that rho naught, the rho critical is, which is 3h squared by 8 pi g. And we know h, we know we can compute h naught. And we know what this quantity is, and this is 2 into 10 to the power minus 29 h squared grams by centimeter cube. And now we also know that rho vac, the rho lambda, is of the same order as this critical energy density in the universe. So if it is of the same order, it essentially means this is 10 to the power minus 29 with h as 0.7, but we are just looking at the order. And this gives us 10 to the power minus 47 GeV4, which is a very different number from here. Okay, so this is the cosmological constant which you will compute from the vacuum fluctuations. But this is the cosmological constant which you observe in the universe if you try to explain the observations. And this is where you will hear many times that there is an order of 120 difference between what is the value given to you by the quantum theory and what is the value given by the observations. But you have to remember that this is very heuristic argument, which is here. This is a fact. This is also not a fact, but assuming there is a lambda, this is what we observe. But this is actually a very heuristic argument. And so you can say, like, maybe like if there is supersymmetry, then this number will reduce, and maybe we can match with this number. So the supersymmetry does invoking supersymmetry and a different k-max just reduces this number, but we still never catch up with this. We are still orders away from this. So this is, I think like this is the biggest prize-winning problem in the world today to explain this, that why there is a huge mismatch. So tomorrow what we'll do is, I'll explain to you why we need lambda. What is observation? Okay, and then we'll go into, I don't think like I have much time left for doing more, because I wanted to cover the open universe and the bubbles. So I will just give you an overview. So tomorrow will be just overview. We'll not have time to go into a lot of derivations. So we have done most of the derivations that we needed. And tomorrow we'll just try to skim over the things, different ideas. Okay, unless like you guys want to see some particular detail being nailed down, then we can do that. So you tell me, what do you want? Do you want an overview of the things, including the lambda problem, or do you want to, shall we calculate something now? Overview? Okay, we'll do that. So tomorrow we'll finish with the lambda problem. I'll give you a brief overview of what is the problem actually, what we see in the universe, and how lambda tries to explain that. And then we'll go to the open inflation landscape, things like that. Maybe we'll discuss cyclic model a little bit again. Okay. Thank you.